Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Milford Research and Consultancy podcast. My name is Libby McCann. I'm the marketer and events coordinator of Milford Research. And I'm here with a very special guest today. Nick, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, thanks very much, Libby. So my name's Nick French. I am a leadership coach and have my own business, which is called Central Coaching. I'm also involved in another business locally that provides training and business support, which is called Sterling Academy. I've been a coach for 2 years, and previous to that, I had a fairly long and expansive career in the corporate world for different businesses, and took roles that were essentially from branch level all the way up to boardroom.
Wow. So I'm guessing all your leadership is definitely backed by lots of experience. So how do you find sort of picking from your own experiences and helping others?
That was one of the main motivations for becoming a coach. And I realised in the latter stages of my career that was the style of leadership that I lent into quite heavily, a coaching style, a supportive style. So having realised that, and having also had the experience of being coached myself, I realised that that was something that was, it came quite natural to me. So then taking the step into becoming a coach myself, it felt really easy to step into a space where I could have conversations with people, draw on my experience, but not to tell them what to do. That's mentoring, which is a whole different ball game, and I can talk about that separately. But to use my experience to know what questions to ask in order to help the person I'm sat with find their best solution and find their way forward. And that's what coaching is all about.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I feel like those values definitely run through the Sterling Education Group, which is where we met. But we'll speak more about that next episode with our next feature. But I feel like it's become very prominent to me and the rest of the team that everybody we work with do share the same values of being empathetic and, you know, using our own experiences to help others and just being very accepting and understanding. And it's great that obviously you share those same values as well. And I was just wondering how you find things like networking and leadership skills, how they all sort of fuel your day-to-day work. So I'm sure that that's very prominent in kind of what you do.
Yeah, networking's an interesting one, because when I left the corporate world, which is 2 years ago in a couple of weeks' time, I tentatively dipped my toe in the water where networking was concerned.
Yeah.
And went to a number of different groups and found it a really odd experience. Reflecting back on my time in the corporate world, I didn't do much networking. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the value in it. And that probably put me at a slight disadvantage. I wouldn't say I was afraid of it. I was more trying to work out how it worked.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one, isn't it? Because it's kind of like trying to form friendships within 30 minutes and figuring each other out.
And the start of my networking journey purposefully was sort of in the autumn of 2023. And I'd been struggling to get clients and struggling to get my message across. And I was actually away on holiday at the time, and I kind of was thinking about things, and I just thought, let's be really simple. Let's strip it back to basics. You're going to go networking, you're going to meet a whole load of new people. And the only thing that I expected from myself was to make sure that every conversation I had was a good conversation, regardless of who that person was, what they did, you know, zero expectations. And that stood me in really good stead in the early days, because I just walked into a room with curiosity dialed up to the max and wanting to know about the people that were in the room.
Is that occupation as well as personal? What sort of approach would you take?
Yeah, I always like to know a bit about the person as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Because if you just focus on what they do, where's the motivation? What drives them? You know, people are driven by various things, whether it be family or you know, previous career experiences or financial. You know, that's just as important.
Yeah, of course.
But understanding the person you're talking to and getting to know them a bit more intimately is always going to create more value in the relationship you build.
I completely agree. And I think, you know, with the networking experience I've had as well, I feel like I agree with what you said, as how you mentioned that finding out more about the personal side of somebody as well as their occupation does help with the connection grow as well, because mm-hmm. it's not just a transactional thing. It feels more also like a genuine conversation. And I find that very nice, kind of as a young person in a room full of obviously older people that have a lot more experience than me. It's nice to know that they're not just this professional. They're also somebody that have things to smile about as well.
I had, I felt that that was a real strong thread in my leadership style when I was in my previous roles. One example of that would be when I was looking after the West Midlands for a previous employer. I had 22 branches and about 300 employees. And I could happily take you into any branch on any day and introduce you to everybody and tell you something about them that wasn't work related.
That's really good.
Whether it be whether they were married, if they had children, what their dog's name was, what football team they supported, just something. And I've always been curious about people.
Yeah.
So it came naturally. It wasn't something I had to work on. It just was really easy to do. And that built up quite a strong rapport with the people that I work with, to the point where I got really, well, we collectively got really great results mm-hmm. because we'd built that kind of relationship. And they weren't fearful of me coming in. It wasn't, oh, Nick's coming today. We've got to be on our best behaviour. Yeah. And it worked incredibly well. And I took that throughout my career.
Well, yeah, I guess from a managerial perspective as well, you'd be able to see people in their own sort of element and their actual state of being as well whilst being at work, if they feel like they could approach you and things. But I feel like what you said about sort of the human connection side is really important, because I can definitely tell since sort of COVID and the development of technology as well, like people just ignore getting to know people. You know, the easy, normal way is talking face to face, just because we've lost so many sort of interpersonal skills alongside the growth of those things. And I know that personally, as a young person, it's a lot easier for me to text rather than speak face to face. But I find that so crazy, because it's normal for people to have that connection and have that sort of foundation of, oh, okay, let's talk now. And I find being in the office with the rest of my team as well, because we're all similar ages and we do get on great, it's just like such a different atmosphere working with people one-on-one. And I do really think that that's something we need to keep going. And if you're a new time listener, my business is Milford Research, and we are based with lots of student employees. So pretty much 99% of the business is ran by people 21 plus or 18 plus. And I really think it's important for businesses to realise how great it is for them to embrace young people and provide that nurture. And I suppose another question for you, Nick, is how do you think other businesses should approach young people with hiring young people and getting young people involved with their company?
So if I can answer that by just going back a step to something you said, which is how young people communicate. Now, because of the pandemic and the acceleration in the digitalization of the world, people of your generation, and I sound really old by saying that, but you know, Gen Z, and then as are coming up behind them, Gen Alpha, are far more advanced in those spaces. And I think there's a couple of sides to this. One is to consider, yes, we need to support young people in getting into environments where they can interact, you know, collaboratively together, because it is easy for them to go to a phone or to a tablet or whatever. And that's really important, but it requires time and it requires effort, because the world has conditioned young people to not do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, I've got a 17-year-old son who communicates freely with his friends, but unless he's stood in the same room with them at school, he's not talking to them. He's doing it online.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think employers need to understand is that, yes, you want to encourage your young people to step out of a comfortable space and go into a less comfortable one by being present and physically in a room and so on, but you can't just chuck them in there and hope for the best.
Yeah, of course.
So there's got to be an element of exposing them gently, getting them to understand how they can interact in a way that's comfortable to them in an environment that's different. And I think that's something that, from what I've seen of Milford Research, Rob does incredibly well, because he brings you and you, the other members of your team, together in an environment where you can do that.
I completely agree. I think he's definitely very good at the sort of transition between environments as well. And it's all very natural. I feel like that's another key point that I think businesses should look at when they're hiring younger people, is not making it feel forced and kind of like, okay, we have this new employee now, please talk to them and be nice. It's just supposed to be more of a gradual sort of integration. And that just makes them settled as well, makes them feel like they can be themselves and maybe be the person they've shown in the interview. It's a one-on-one conversation, which is a lot easier than kind of just being the odd one out in a massive group of people that already know each other.
If I could share an experience I think is really relevant here, and this goes back again, it was to the last business I worked for. And we identified that we had a problem retaining young people under 25.
Okay.
And the attrition rate in terms of how quickly we were losing them was about 50% within the first 6 months, which is horrendous. And what we did was start to analyse the data we got from things like exit interviews and leavers questionnaires. But also we then started to sit down with the young people that stayed, created working groups and forums to get to understand the things we did well and the things that didn't work. And essentially what we realised was, yeah, we got an induction programme that was serviceable and functional. But after that, the transition into a quite complex working environment,
it sounded it's the same company,
was really poor.
Yeah.
And, you know, I use this kind of tongue in cheek, but the worst example of it would be, Libby, we brought you in, we've done your induction for the last week, that's great. So if you go and sit over there now next to this guy, Bob, who's been here for 30 years, you've got 2 weeks to learn everything he knows. And guess what? You fail miserably.
Yeah.
And okay, that's a bit of a extension of reality, but we needed to understand that A, we were setting people up to fail, and B, there were different ways that needed to be created to bring young people in and retain them, and we had to think differently. And a piece of work I did was around young people's values, what they hold important, and that was a real eye-opener for me, because while those weren't new values, they were more important to this generation that were entering the workforce than they were to their predecessors.
Well, that's really interesting. So what sort of values did you find with that?
So the things that really stood out were a sense of belonging. So young people wanted to be part of something. Young people wanted, they want a clear trajectory for their career path and their development. They want a really good work-life balance. And these aren't things that Gen Y and Gen X were particularly interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably the three that spring to mind the most. And when you consider them against their previous generations, you know, they're less willing to accept a poor standard of employment.
Yes,
And there is a suggestion that young people now almost interview their employer when they're coming on board. So that's been really insightful. And what I found is that young people, because they have so much opportunity around them now, they're very agile in the workspace. So the concept of having a job for life, which someone like me would have entered the workforce 40 years ago and thought of, is it completely irrelevant now? And young people might stay for 2 to 3 years and then move on. And employers haven't worked out how to get the best out of that 2 to 3 years yet. I'm globalising a little bit, but that's a big challenge. So you make the best of the young person you've got in front of you, and you think about what backfilling them and the pipeline of talent that you're going to create looks like, because it's not 5-10 years in chunks, it's 2 to 3 years.
I do find that interesting as well, because, yeah, I mean, let me have a think. I think the longest I've stayed in a role has been 1 year and 6 months, and that was just working part-time in the fast food industry. But yeah, I can't really speak from the perspective as to why you'd want to leave somewhere just yet, just because I'm very lucky with the job that I have now. You know, as stated previously, the environment is great and the collaborative element of the job is amazing as well. But I do just think we're such a fast-paced generation, because obviously we've always got our phones on, our apps on, TV. We also have like a shorter attention span as well. So I think we just, you just lose motivation really easily, and it's hard to kind of pick that up if you're always sat in the same seat with the same people, same place, same task. It's like you have to have diversity, I think. And I think a lot of sort of corporations don't really sort of skew from what they're good at just yet. But obviously innovative companies like Spotify, Apple, they're always making new additions to their platforms and things. And I feel like that's what grabs people's attention. And it would definitely be difficult to kind of integrate that into, I don't know, business strategy and operations and just day-to-day work, really, if your business wasn't made at the core with that type of thing. Obviously, you know, I'm generalizing as well. I'm sure somebody my age would love to just have the, I'm at work, I know what I'm doing today, I'm going home. But I think for most people now, it's, you know, we see, we're always fed different images of, I don't know, people traveling in Bali, people trying new foods and things. It's like we're never really satisfied. And I think if you approach employment with the idea of no one's ever 100% with you all the time, it lets you also sort of free them a little bit when they want to leave as well, so you're not like bitter. Like, no one, I'm sure no one would actually be bitter when someone decides to move on and change career and things, but I think it's just giving people grace as well as part of it as well.
I think you've hit some really interesting points there. The point about attention span, I think, is really interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's something I've talked about quite regularly, and I think the younger generations, because of their ability to access information so readily, then have a problem with stimulation.
Yeah.
Because they're constantly stimulated. You go onto Instagram, TikTok, whatever platform you choose, and content is available.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm 57, I'm way older than that generation, but I've succumbed to it as well. And
it's so easily done, though.
It is.
It's just always in your face all the time.
And you don't have to think, you know,
when
I was in my late teens, early 20s, if I wanted to know something, I'd probably have to go to the library and or read a newspaper. Now I can find something in seconds. And I think the stimulation is where the challenge could be, because the generation that you're part of needs to be stimulated.
I completely agree.
And therefore, if you find yourself in a role that isn't stimulating, guess what, you're going to move on.
I also think that's part of the reason people can work more part-time now and do more hobbies on the side, is because we know what we like and we know that we prefer doing what we enjoy. So as you said, like during interviews, the younger person is also interviewing the interviewer as well. And I feel like we just know when something isn't right for us, and we kind of do just jump into things. But I think that's quite a fun side of people my age. I don't know, it could also just be the immaturity part of that as well, but I'm not sure if that's something that's prevalent to you as well. Or
I think it's sure. For employers and wider organisations, I think education, which I'll come on to in a moment, have started to understand this. But I think understanding how different the generation is, and how they think differently and what their influences are and their values, as I mentioned earlier, is part of the challenge.
Yeah.
What's interesting where education's concerned, and I've done some work in education over the last year, is that the concept of squiggly careers, which was introduced to me about 5 years ago.
That sounds quite fun, squiggly careers.
In that your career doesn't follow a linear path.
Yeah.
And, you know, Gen X, Gen Y, to a certain extent, that would have been the case. But that's much less so now. So young people will move from job to job and it will form a wavy line. And the concept of squiggly careers is actually encouraged in education because young people don't necessarily know what they want to do next. And therefore, their decision they make today isn't going to impact them forever, because they'll move on to something else and then to something else. So that in itself is creating this opportunity to be quite fluid. And I think that's a really exciting thing.
Yeah, for sure.
But the world of employment probably doesn't see it the same, because, as I mentioned earlier, you've got a real fluidity in the workforce then, and you've got to think how you can adapt to that quicker and be more effective.
Yeah, I was going to say, it definitely touches on the fact of what you said earlier, of we have so many opportunities presented to us, especially with, you know, everything being digital now. You can learn what you want to learn, if even if someone's based a million miles from you, they sell a package of skills or videos to train you, it's there and you can learn it. I think that it's quite lovely to be overwhelmed by choice and just figure out what you want to do personally. But I do agree that with the way that companies are set up and even education, it would be hard to change all of those fundamentals. It will take quite a while to adjust there. But once we get there, I feel like it'd be a whole new world.
I agree. And I think education itself has a huge part to play in. And certainly education in this country is quite regimented. It's quite rigorous. You know, the curriculum's quite old fashioned, and a lot of people even in education will tell you it's not fit for purpose anymore.
Yeah.
And young people need to learn different skills as opposed to the traditional subjects that they're taught. I was talking to someone only earlier today, and the decisions that someone makes at 15, 16 don't necessarily have an impact 10 years later. Whereas we were all taught when I was that age that that's how your future is planned out.
Yeah.
And therefore, making decisions about what GCSEs to take and what A-levels to take and what degree to take, they're not irrelevant by any stretch of the imagination, but there's so much more scope within that. And therefore, those decisions aren't necessarily as life-defining as they would have been for their predecessors. They're not irrelevant by any stretch of the imagination, but there's so much more scope within that, and therefore those decisions aren't necessarily as life-defining as they would have been for their predecessors.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think with the curriculum side of things as well, I think that we should have a much bigger emphasis on things like PSHE as well as IT. We should be really prevalent in what we do because, well, actually, I may even go back on that. Kids teach themselves now how to use iPads and computers and things, but maybe IT in the sense of AI, like how to spot fake videos and things like that. But as I said, like that would be take so long to be implemented. But I think that, you know, we should start now with the changes and things like that as well.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And things like PSHE, which at the moment, this is my view, is this kind of umbrella term where they put stuff that doesn't fit into the rest of the curriculum.
Yeah.
And it feels quite crowded because there's a lot of stuff in there that's probably more relevant to young people than it has been previously. So I'm with you in terms of it needs more attention and more airtime. One of the things that, interestingly, I picked up in a conversation a few weeks ago while I was doing a careers day at school is that children aren't taught to be entrepreneurial. So if you think about some of the role models that young people have got nowadays, they're quite limited in terms of that entrepreneurial spirit. So Stephen Bartlett's always the one that springs to mind because he's slightly above Gen Z, but not too far away.
Right, okay.
His story is a really dramatic one in terms of how he came to this country and he built himself up from nothing and has been incredibly successful. But there aren't huge amounts of really prevalent examples because education doesn't lean into entrepreneurialism.
Yeah.
And given the amount of small businesses that then get started up, are young people at a disadvantage in starting those new businesses because they haven't necessarily got some of the skills that would stand them in good stead going forward?
That's a really good point. I also think that entrepreneurship is quite different now anyway with things like influencers, because realistically I would class them as a type of entrepreneur because they're making their own brand and getting themselves out there, but it doesn't come alongside of all of the sort of business techie side of being an entrepreneur. And I do think it's so easy to start your own business kind of as you said, but we don't know anything about how to, I don't know, when you're 15, 16, how to do taxes or things about mortgages and things that you'd need to know if you were kind of on your own. And I do think that's a really interesting point. I mean, thinking about it, I don't really know anyone that's an entrepreneur that I could name, I suppose. I think that that's quite really interesting as to what you've just pinned down.
I think your point about influencers, and I'd stick YouTubers in that category as well. This is a different breed of entrepreneurialism. You know, it's using a product, which is the digital space, to create things that people want. You know, as a 57-year-old, I've got into YouTube in the last probably 12 months and only watched football-related stuff. But the guys I watch, that's their job.
Yeah.
And they're probably slightly younger than me, but not much. And they've forged careers in that space, creating videos day in, day out that people want to watch. And then they get sponsorship deals.
Well. Yeah. So
I think it's, your point's a really good one. There is a new type of entrepreneurialism that sits around the digital space, and AI will be another explosion of that. As the old adage that there are jobs that we don't know haven't been created yet that will come as a result of AI. And while there's fear that AI will make some jobs superfluous, other jobs will replace those, because ultimately it will need to be monitored, regulated, controlled, enhanced, built. So that it's quite an exciting time.
I don't know how I feel about AI. I think it's fun to kind of mess about with and have it reword a LinkedIn post once or twice, but I don't know, there's bigger implications with it, especially with the deepfake videos. You know, I saw one of a president talking and it looks so real, but it's just completely fake. It was just mind-blowing.
I think with any technology, in the hands of the right people, it'll be a really powerful tool. In the hands of the wrong people, it'll be used destructively. I'm not sure how we can stop either.
Well, it's a free to use thing, isn't it? I don't know if we can, to be honest. So Nick, as a business leader, how would you believe that other business leads could support the next generation?
Do you know what? I think the first thing is put away all your preconceptions and start asking questions.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. Find out what makes the young person in your organisation tick. And really try and get close to them and understand what they value, what they enjoy about your organisation, what they don't enjoy, and then use that information. Think about things like job descriptions, job adverts, job roles, and start tailoring them to the skills that young people have got. And I hear this quite commonly. Company A needs to recruit someone, and they think it looks like this, you know, this job role. And then they recruit that person and they get them doing other things.
Yes, yeah.
And especially if they're a younger person, well, hold on a minute. You brought me in to do that job, but now I'm doing that job. That's not what I came for. And that happens a lot, because we've got antiquated job specs, we've got antiquated ways of recruitment. And I know there's developments in terms of doing videos online for CVs and stuff like that. That's great. But I think there needs to be a big step forward. And then there's a flip side to that, which is people like me helping young people to understand what the transition looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, using our experience not to turn them into something they're not ready to be, but to get them to understand how stepping into the world of employment is going to look and feel. And I think Milford Research has done a brilliant job of that with you all, because you've been able to do things like networking and presenting and so on that maybe wouldn't have come easily at all had you not had that gentle exposure.
Yeah, the opportunity. I feel like that's side of it as well that isn't really spoken about. It's actually giving young people a chance, because I know that I've mentioned quite a few times already today that obviously technology has really impacted young people's development and things with like talking and, you know, all the other stuff. But I do think if you gave more young people the chance to speak face to face with people and do things like expos and networking sessions, I feel like people would jump at it.
Mm-hmm.
Purely for the self-confidence side of it as well. And yeah, obviously it's a big part of business as well, networking. As you said, you know, you're in a bit of a struggle time, and then you decided to network a bit differently and everything worked out even better for you, which is brilliant. But I feel like young people know as well, it's the connections that you have, not the job role, that really make you succeed. And I feel like even having more exposure for myself on LinkedIn, that's really helped me meet different businesses and people even on there that, you know, are very, very valuable people to continue to know and sort of talk to on there as well. And I think that also that could probably come from the point of us kind of always being on social media. Like, we always know that it's better to follow someone we find interesting than someone we don't. And I feel like that kind of feeds in with the aspect of LinkedIn and networking, of connections are good, having more people interested in you is good. So I feel like, yeah, networking and just having the opportunities to do something outside of the box for a young person, especially a young person that's just entered a new workplace or the job market in general. It's always really, really good, because we are willing. I feel like there's a big sort of misconception that we're like a lazy generation, we're not willing to work, but it's just finding the right thing that, as you said, makes us tick and gets us interested in the job, and then we'll go full force. Because what else can you do other than work when you get to a certain age? You know, there's always, you know, a bit of the end of the road that you have to kind of come to and go, okay, I actually need to get in gear now.
And those misconceptions are really, really dangerous, I think, because the generational gap is wider than it's ever been, because Gen Z are so different to their predecessors. And most of the people who are managing these people are a generation or two behind them. And if I think about a 40/50-something person who's come through the workforce and is managing 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds, that kind of thing, they're so different. And I spend time with managers in organisations who are having this challenge, and I try and give them some support and some guidance around how they can treat young people differently. And that's not to say that young people should get free rein.
Yes, of course.
Not the case at all. But they should think differently, because you'll get a better response if you try different tactics. And just throwing a young person in the deep end generally doesn't work anymore. So you have to introduce them to situations. And you talked about confidence, you know, exposure. What did you learn?
Mm-hmm.
How did that go for you? What are you going to do next time? And giving them the opportunity to learn at a pace and be exposed to new experiences at a pace that suits them. And that may not, I mean, may be quite a challenge for some businesses, because they work at real breakneck pace sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think the whole concept is really fascinating, and there's so much work that needs to be done.
So would you say with your leadership work, is that quite a prevalent sort of topic then with your sessions, as to how to integrate a young person into your workplace?
It's definitely becoming more so. I've got clients who are of that generation that I'm working with, and even they, you know, in management positions are having to learn how to motivate young people, because their bosses are, you know, 20, 30 years older and are telling them stuff that isn't working.
Yeah.
So, yeah, these conversations are becoming more and more prevalent. They're also becoming more prevalent in education settings.
That's good.
Because teachers and, you know, staff in schools and colleges know and understand what this challenge looks like. And I think one of the things that is I'm really passionate about is being able to bridge the gap between education and business, so that people understand that they actually both want the same thing.
Yes, yeah.
But they've never really stood next to each other side by side and tried to work out how to be effective together.
Yeah, definitely with our programmes, that's definitely the main focus of kind of what we provide with our Lean Beyond the Business programmes. And I think even from a personal perspective of being a mentee and then being an employed by my mentor, even that sort of relationship and having that sort of, it's hard to explain, that sort of neutral guidance as to what to do next was really helpful for me. And I do think young people definitely do want the guidance, but it's to also be understood. I wouldn't even say like appreciated, I suppose, just understood as to how we think and how we maneuver around life at the moment. And I do think being a mentee for the Power Up program was that sort of helping hand for me. And I'm really lucky that I was given that opportunity when I did, because I was in year 11 going into year 12, or year 12 into year 13, either one. But yeah, I've been in contact with my boss for years and years now, even before my full-time job. And I do think people just need to definitely just have the conversations with people they know that could, you know, bring them into a different type of workplace or present a different opportunity than maybe their usual sort of careers advisor would be able to find and things. So I completely agree with what you said about bridging the gap between education and business. And I do think that, you know, we'd love for you to be involved with Confidence Plus again next year, or even BAS, anything like that. Something we can speak about later, obviously. We're all definitely passionate about what we're doing. Mm. So really exciting, and maybe even you might see a new face from Milford at the networking events that we go to.
I look forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be really, really fun.
I really like the point you made there about young people being heard. And there's this horrible sort of point of view at the moment that young people are entitled. Mm. Horrible, horrible word. But it comes from the fact that young people have got more information readily available, and they form stronger opinions much quicker than their predecessors. So my 17-year-old son is a history buff, loves history.
That's really cool.
It is pretty cool. And he has opinions, and very strong opinions, mm-hmm. on all sorts of things, whether it be the state of America under Donald Trump through to the way the Nazis conducted themselves in the lead up to the Second World War. And one thing I've noticed that's different compared to his older brothers is the strength of opinion that he has on stuff, anything. Mm-hmm. And he believes himself to be right because he's absorbed information so readily.
Yeah.
And I think that creates this, if you like, semi-entitlement kind of perspective, because young people get information so quickly, they absorb it, they form an opinion, and that's where they're going.
Yeah.
And that's fine. What we need to do is understand that that is the case, and then start to challenge perspectives, start to get them thinking about other possibilities. And when I have conversations with my son, and I'm not a history buff, so I can't talk about that sort of thing, mm-hmm. but we'll talk about other things. And you can introduce a different perspective in a way that gets the conversation going. Too often when someone says young people are entitled or they're, you know, lazy or whatever it is, it's not allowing them to be heard and not wanting to hear what they've got to say. And they go, okay, that's fine, but have you thought about this? And I find young people can be really quite inspiring and energising when it comes to having those conversations, mm-hmm. because they're full of information. So that's really a really exciting thing, I think.
I think that I can definitely back that as well. Because I know if there was a debate club in my high school, I would have been there and I would have been yelling my opinion from the rooftops and no one would tell me no. But I do think, yeah, it is because we're always seeing different things and always learning something new all the time, whether it's useless information or about things like politics or history. There's always something there and always something for us to kind of nitpick at or think about. And then the next level is when you go into the comments and you hear different people's opinions and different people's perspectives.
One of the things that's taken me by surprise in terms of the interest in it is from a leadership perspective, how that shows up for young people.
Okay.
And you referenced Confidence Plus earlier. I was fortunate enough to be involved in that in a small way and talk about leadership in the student space. And I've created some workshop content for schools to be able, for me to run workshops in schools, highlighting how leadership shows up at that early stage,
mm-hmm.
and getting students to think about the behaviours that they can exhibit that will set them up to be leaders of the future. There are, when you think about leadership or you think about great leaders, there's almost a bit of a mystique sometimes around it. But when you boil it down to behaviours, there's some really simple stuff in there. Active listening. You know, the old adage of you've got two ears and one mouth has never been more true. Mm. Being able to show empathy towards people. Being able to reflect. And then combining those things to make sound decisions. These are not, I would say, characteristics that, you know, you have to be 30 years old and been in an organisation for years and years to be able to do. You can do those things in an education environment if you play sport or if you are on the debating team, mm-hmm. or, you know, if you do some of the creative arts. Understanding how collaboration works in that space is really, really crucial.
Yes.
So these are just basic behaviours. But if you hone them at a young age, actually the opportunity to be a great leader will show up because you hone the right skills.
And I definitely think that being a great leader is more of like a rubber band term. It's so flexible. It kind of just depends on what you think is a great leader. And I also think being a great leader means applying yourself in different ways in different situations, which I'm sure that, you know, when someone comes to you for your services, you have to definitely be flexible and have that sort of fast-paced sort of changing moment in your head as to how to approach different ideas and things, different solutions for them. And I always find that quite interesting with how Rob approaches his work as well, because he's like an octopus. He's got so many hands and so many different pots of things. He always has to switch from side to side. I find that side of having that expertise and being a professional in what you do really interesting. Aspirational as well, or admirable, I suppose is a better word, of very obvious that you're passionate with what you do. And I was just wondering, yeah, how do you approach your leadership sessions then? Because surely it's so different every single time you're talking to someone new.
It is, yeah. I pride myself on being completely client-led. Mm. So when I first meet with a potential client, I really get under the skin of what they want and understand what working with me would achieve. And that's the bare minimum for me.
Mm-hmm.
We should achieve that at very least, and I'd expect to achieve more. So I'll give you an example. I'm going to be starting working with someone fairly soon, probably in the next couple of months. And their business is just about to expand significantly, and they're going to be growing their team significantly.
Ooh, nice.
And they want to work with me because leadership is not something that they've had to think about. They've had a relatively small team.
Mm-hmm.
And their job role didn't really mean that they had people working directly for them.
Yeah.
And when we start working together, one of the things that I will do is to start to really explore what they already do and how do they show up in their day-to-day work and what the things they currently do that are going to help them progress into becoming a great leader, because the chances are they're doing a load of good stuff already. They just don't see it in that way.
So you're kind of an investigator.
To a degree, yeah. And then, yeah, working with me would, you get asked a lot of questions, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
And the idea behind that is to help the person in front of me think really deeply and then explore ways that they can do things better or differently and achieve the desired outcomes they want. And invariably, when we come to the end of a program, the bare minimum is achieved and then a load of other really exciting stuff on top. I'm very clear with my clients that we measure success consistently and regularly. So
that's good.
At the end of a session, what does the client want to take away to work on? It's not homework. Nick's not telling you go away and do this.
Yeah.
Client decides what they want to do. And then when we come back, we measure progress. How have they got on? And then there's the accountability piece. I'm not there to be someone's dad or someone's teacher and stand mm-hmm. over them. But if they said they were going to do something and they haven't done it, what's the reason?
Yeah.
Is the landscape changed for them? Is that not relevant anymore? What's got in the way? Because it was their commitment to themselves, not mine.
Yeah, not to you, yeah.
So I think it's really important to take that approach. And ultimately, the client, without necessarily thinking it, leads the journey. You know, it's their journey, not mine.
Mm. I bet some of the time as well, they kind of have all the answers, but they've just been so overwhelmed with their situation, they just haven't actually been able to pinpoint what they feel and what they think.
Yeah, very frequently. And it's about asking the right questions at the right time. And there are various tools and techniques that I can employ as well. And I mentioned right at the beginning of the podcast about mentoring. So when I first decided to become a coach, I thought, everybody told me I would be a great coach. That's mm-hmm. great. Lovely. Thank you very much. And when I trained to be a coach, I realised actually I was a pretty good mentor. But I learnt loads of stuff about being a coach. And mentoring is slightly different. And I incorporate mentoring into my approach because if I'm working with you and we're talking about something and I kind of go back through the, you know, the archives of time and the experience I've got and go, there's something I think might be helpful here.
Yeah.
And I will call it out. I'll say, are you happy for me to take a slightly different approach? This is more of a mentoring approach and I'll offer something.
Oh, okay.
But I'll do it really, really lightly. So if you choose to take it, that's entirely up to you.
Mm.
And if it works, great. If it doesn't, that's not a problem because we can find other things to work on. If you choose not to take it, that's just as fine. Because when you're mentoring someone, what you're doing is sharing experience and your view of the world. And the challenge is that's your view of the world.
Yeah,
so
it's hard to.
You're different to me.
Yeah, deviate from
that. And what I did might not work. That's why I always keep it really, really light touch. But I do like to be able to flick between the two when it's appropriate for the client. And I find with a lot of small business owners who have created their business through the passion and energy they've got for their thing, sometimes the stuff they don't know, and that might require me to step into a mentoring conversation.
And give that bit more of assistance and...
Yeah, and I will always take myself back into the coaching space and take the client with me, but I'll always be really clear about how we're flicking between the two if that's what we do.
That's interesting. So, okay, just a sort of personal question to you. So why do you think it's important to inform the client that you're changing your approach to things?
That is probably born out of having been trained as a coach and I have to uphold certain criteria and credentials as an accredited coach. So I've got accreditations with the two biggest coaching federations in the world. And every time I renew as an accredited coach, I have to be evaluated.
Oh, wow.
And one of the principles of coaching is that coaching helps someone find their way, doesn't tell them what to do.
Yeah.
So mentoring has a place in certain conversations, but it's not the way I do things. And the reason why I call it out to the client is so that they understand that this is a different approach we're going to take for a moment or two. I call stuff out to clients quite regularly. If I'm working with someone and I see a body language shift, I'll share it with the client because those are usually unconscious. So I had one last week. I was working with a client and I made an observation about something they said and their body language got quite they kind of stiffened up and they crossed their legs and then done that in three sessions. And I called it out and said, what I've said to you has obviously sparked a thought or hit a note because your body language has completely changed. And they stopped and they thought about it and they went, you know what, you're right.
Mm.
And actually what that's done for me is X. So I think sharing what I see with the client is really helpful because it helps them to see more than just what's going on in their head.
Being a little fly on the wall, sounds it. No, that's really, really interesting. I think that you'd have to sort of take a psychologist approach as well sometimes to try and figure out what someone else is thinking as you're talking to them if you see some type of body language shift. It's a side of what we do that does interest me because we offer the leadership clinic, which I'm sure is similar but different at the same time. And we do assist people with, their work life and their day-to-day operations and things. But I've sat in a few of the sessions that Rob has done of the leadership clinic and, the conversations that I had there are really interesting. And the way that the conversation can just flip from one issue to a different issue and getting to the root of one problem and then having to think about all the five other little roots of that problem that you need to tackle one by one as well to kind of see an issue holistically.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah, and there's lots of different ways to be a leader.
Yeah.
There are lots of leadership styles and they come and go in terms of how fashionable they are, I suppose.
Mm.
You know, I had my first manager's job at 18 and leadership in the 80s was autocratic, do as I say.
Yeah.
And that was the style of management I adopted because that was the person that taught me how to manage. Didn't work very well for very long because you treat people badly and they don't tend to respond very well.
Well, yeah.
So you learn valuable lessons when you have bad results, and then you have to think about how you do things differently. And there are times as a leader when you have to adopt different approaches. Some people respond well to direct challenges. Mm-hmm. Some people respond better to the proverbial arm around the shoulder and that nurturing approach. And then there's a whole range of things in between and around that. So it's knowing when to take a different approach with someone.
Mm, I definitely think for myself, I obviously do appreciate the nurturing side of, my workplace here. But sometimes when I'm told, okay, you need to do this by this time, I'm like, yes, on it. And it's more of a push. But obviously, as you said, it depends on what sort of effect you want and mm-hmm. when the time is right and things. And yeah, being a manager and having those leadership skills is something that interests me, which I'm, so glad to be part of the Institute of Leadership as well, having that membership with that organisation and having all of the connections there, because everybody has such a different story. Mm-hmm. And I do think that, both of you and Rob and other leadership coaches, it's great that you can pull from your expertise and your experience and help other people. And I do think, kind of as I said at the start, everyone we work with has that same value of just helping others.
Mm-hmm. I find people really willing. Mm. And I think the small business owner operator space very much so, because people running small businesses can't do everything on their own, and they rely on their networks, they rely on their friends, their family. And I certainly see that, when I go back to my corporate world, you couldn't run a big business. Mm-hmm. To one person's thought process, you have to have a melting pot of ideas to create the best strategy. When I was on the board of a business in my last organisation, 6 or 7 of us on the board, all very, very different, all adding something different to the mix.
That must be interesting to sit and listen into. Guess you'd have one idea in your mind and then people would stir up another one.
Very much so, yeah. And it teaches you a lot about how to interact with people, how to collaborate, how to negotiate, how to challenge, and these environments can be quite high energy and highly emotionally charged sometimes, because there's a lot at stake.
Yes.
But it's a fascinating environment to be part of.
We may be having a board soon with our shift to the CIC, so we've recruited a few members for that.
Yeah.
Lots of big changes coming throughout the next annual year, but also the academic year. Do you have anything lined up that you're excited to share?
I'm actually looking at the moment to explore opportunities to do more speaking, because it's something I enjoy doing. I think I can turn my hand to a large number of topics, and it's something I want to hone my skills on. And also, the more people who get to see what I do, the more my reach grows, the more connections I make, the more likelihood I have of capturing more people to work with.
Yeah.
So it has lots of benefits to it. So that's something I'm going to be leaning into in the latter stages of this year, to try and build my own kind of presence and reach. Still got work lined up in various educational settings that will continue. And then supporting programs. I'm part of the Power Up Mentoring Foundation that we both know and are familiar with. I've got someone lined up for September to work with.
Oh, that's nice.
And again, opportunity to work with Confidence Plus would be fantastic.
Oh yes, 100%. Signed up right here, right now.
There's lots of really, really good, interesting stuff in the pipeline.
Really, really exciting. I know that our company, we do a lot of speaking at universities and things. I'm sure that, if you'd like the contacts for that, 100%. But I think, the more that people have goals for themselves, the more that they're motivated to do what they love, I think. It's always good to have goals. Okay, well, I think that kind of wraps up our session for today. I've been Libby Cam from Milford Research. Thank you so much for listening. And Nick, would you like to say goodbye?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me along. I've really enjoyed it. I think doing podcasts is a great way of getting out to a wider audience. Mm-hmm. I'm really committed to what Milford does. I think what you guys create is fantastic for
thank you.
on so many levels, and I was just really honoured to have been asked to come and speak.
Oh no, I mean, we've always had great conversations every time we've seen you, so why not? Thank you everybody for listening. So this has been Libby and Nick. Bye.
Bye, thank you.